What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles Podcast. I am your host, Raymond Summerlin. I'm joined today, as I am very often, by my good friend Richard Rebar. We have a very special guest, the boss himself, Mr. Warren Sharp. How you doing, Warren?
Can't complain, fellas. Exciting time to be an NFL fan. Lots of players moving around. We got hit early on Monday during legal tampering. So we got a lot of the good stuff out of the way early. So that was a good thing. But no, it's going great.
Yeah, it was a fun Monday and Tuesday for this trio. We had a lot of fun together on Slack, just trying to figure out everything that was going on. And yeah, it all went early. But before we get to all that, we do have to talk about information. I was just given a breaking news bulletin as we came on that Mr. Rich Rebar's son has seen Dune five times. How did he find the time to see Dune five times? What are we doing here?
I mean, collectively, what is that? That's like 16 hours of life, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of Dune is what it is. Like he might be their leader now. Like that might be the position we're in. Warren, you said you haven't seen it yet, though. Is that right?
I want to see it. I like the first one that they did a couple of years ago. I do want to see Dune 2. I'm excited. I've never actually read the book. Sorry, I'm not as big of a reader in the fiction space, but I love the first one. Want to see the second one. Now, Rich, I got to ask, has he given you any feedback? Like, does he, from 4 to 5, does he notice something different? Does something else stand out to him? Like, what is the kind of takeaway? What propels you besides just, you know, you've got the past, like you said, to want to see it that many times?
He came back in last night and his synopsis was, it's still good. and so I've been trying to get him to watch a lot of the director's other movies. I don't want to butcher his last name, Dennis Villeneuve. If you follow his track record, I mean, he's on like a 6-movie heater. I mean, if you know, Blade Runner.
Arrival Sicario. Is spectacular. Sicario, spectacular.
Blade Denny's Runner 2049, amazing.
I'm more of a take or leave on that one, but but Arrival, man. Arrival's
quite. I'm in the pocket for Big Gosling, too.
Yeah, that's fair. Is he part of the Fremen religion now? Like, is he converted? Is he? He's all the way in on everything?
Yeah.
Braden, I can't imagine.
Mwadweeb.
I really like that movie. I think it's very good. And obviously, I love Denny, but five times. That's. I can't stop thinking about it. I've been trying to stop thinking about it. We're going to start thinking about some things that are available on the website. Normally it's March, y'all. We don't have stuff available. You know, we don't have things available on the website. But this year, we've got a lot of content coming out. We had a ton of free agency content come out. Head over to sharpfootballanalysis.com. You'll get to check it all. And as a part of that, we're giving out early access to our fantasy package and the ability to pre-order Warren Sharp's 2024 football preview, a book that I can highly recommend to you because even before I worked here, I would read it every year. Highly recommend that to you. Really happy to have those available already on the site. Head over to Sharp Football Analysis, like I said. Check out all of the content that Rich and Warren have created this week around free agency, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about here on this show. And then also, you know, go over and pre-order the book. You won't regret it. The book is great. And make sure you pre-order it. But let's get right here into free agency. I guess I want to start positive. I kind of sent a negative tweet yesterday and I got an entire fan base mad at me. So I want to start positive here with this. And I want to start positive with teams who we think did well in free agency. As we come out of these first, you know, 3 days, who are teams that we feel really good about? I guess, Warren, you could start. Who are you feeling great about coming out of this beginning to free agency?
Well, great is relative to me because sure. I generally feel like when you're spending too much in free agency trying to add too many components to your team, A, it meant your team wasn't that great, but B, it also means that you're overpaying for all of these players because free agency generally, with some exceptions, but generally speaking, you are overpaying. And as a result, we've looked at the studies in the past. We wrote articles on them in the past. If you've been following us for years, you know that it's inversely correlated. If you spend a lot in free agency, you generally don't perform very well. And it tends to catch up with you. It's not necessarily the first year. Some of the teams that spent the most money in free agency in year one would sometimes get a little 1 year bump. But then it's a year two and three when a lot of times you sign a guy for several years, more than one, and you see that salary cap spike in year two or year three compared to what it was year one. They try to get a lower cap hit in that first season. So I don't love spending in free agency. But all of that being said, it's hard not to start with the Atlanta Falcons from my perspective, just because they upgraded massively at the most important position. And we all were an Atlanta Falcons podcast last season. We were rooting for the Atlanta Falcons. I cannot, you know, I guess we could dive into Kirk Cousins later, Ray. Let's just focus on a team I thought did good, and then we can break down Kirk. But it's hard to overstate how crappy that quarterback play was for the last several years in Atlanta. And I understand what they were doing. We'll talk about that later with why they were getting that bad quarterback play. But I think upgrading at that most massive position is definitely something that weighs heavily for me. So I would go with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, I think the Falcons are interesting because the picture's not complete. They also added Darnell Mooney, who I think that is a really good addition as a complement to Drake London and kind of that skill set mesh. But they filled a lot of holes, like with short-term rentals on defense last year. They did bring in Jesse Bates, and that turned out to be an amazing signing, and he is still there. But if you think about their defensive front, there was a lot of kind of short-term rentals that are still available as free agents. Their defense was, you know, much improved last year, and that was part of the reason why they were able to hang around even with the tough quarterback situation. So I think that they still have some work to do to get back to even the defense that they had last year. But if they're able to do that in this division, I mean, Kirk Cousins is very clearly the best quarterback in this division. And so, yeah, I think you have to feel pretty good about where they are. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to like the Atlanta Falcons because there was one quarterback available in this draft that was of starting quality and a good quarterback. I mean, he was available at 36 years old coming off of an Achilles tear. But, you know, Kirk Cousins is a by far above average quarterback, and he's better than, like you said, the Saints adding like Derek Carr last year. So there's a, you know, a big plus there just by getting the best signing at the one available position at a position of need. And this is a team that's got young talent all over the place too. And they have, you know, draft capital in the top 10 again this year to add another player, that kind of starting quality player right out of the box to them. I'm of Warren, like, you know, free agency is one of these things that like everyone gets excited about. Your team's getting new players. Obviously, like NFL free agents typically fall into like three buckets. It's either you had a career year versus your career production, and like a team's just not willing to pay you based on the 1 year versus like the previous three or four you had with that organization, or inversely, you had a down year, or you're just kind of, things are just kind of age related, like this carousel of running back movement that we've had. So I definitely don't look for like teams, like I look for more subtlety, quality over quantity type of treatment for free agency. I definitely think when you look at that, I think what the Texans have done so far just really stands out, especially paired with having CJ Stroud on a rookie contract. I mean, Daniil Hunter's contract, you know, a lot has been made of him and Greenyard swapping teams, but if you follow the contracts, like Daniil Hunter's contract spike completely coincides with having Stroud on this deal. And then he's out when they have to pay Stroud big money, which we're expecting to have happen, you know, 3 years from now. They add Danico Autry, they add Azeez Al-Shahir to get back with D'Amico Ryans. They get Jeffrey Okuda on a whatever one-year deal. And then you get the Joe Mixon for a seventh-round pick, right? Like a lot of low, subtle investments to make upgrades. They're another team now that has a lot of flexibility, I think, in the first round. I think they want to add more offensive linemen given what happened to them last year. But they've solved, you know, questions that they had from a year ago, making the playoffs when no one kind of expected him to, and not really breaking the bank outside of adding the premier pass rusher and Daniil Hunter to go outside of Will Anderson. So they stand out to me. Some small signings I think stand out. I think Arizona signing Jonah Williams is really intriguing to go with Paris Johnson. Arizona kind of flew under the radar last year. I think the job Drew Petzing did. I can't wait to read when Warren gets to Arizona in the book chapter to see what he has to say about Drew Petzing, because he turned some real, you know, water into wine last year with the personnel that he had. You add potentially maybe Marvin Harrison at pick four to this offense. I mean, it's an intriguing offense kind of already in a quick turnaround there. The Rams adding Jonah Jackson, but the Texans from a team perspective, I think are number one for me.
I think, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Rams because they're kind of the big spending on the offensive line makes a lot of sense for them, especially after they hit big on on a lot of defensive players in the draft. The Cardinals, I mean, did any team go from the beginning of the season, us having literally no faith in the coaching staff, coming out of, let's be honest here, the Cardinals social media team torpedoing their own head coach with the things that they were releasing, to at the end of the season, I mean, we kept saying throughout the year, I mean, these Cardinals are tough. They are pushing teams. They obviously beat the Cowboys, and now they're in a, you know, now they're in a much better position. And so, yeah, I think that I was going to say the Texans. I think the Texans clear and away are the team that come out of this feeling I feel the best about. I'm Mixon. You're right. Mixon's not an elite back, but he's probably as good as Devin Singletary. You only had to pay him a seventh round pick, $6 million cap charge. And the thing about the one thing you would say is they did get older with the changes they made, right? They did get older with Greener to Hunter, with, I guess not with Rankins to, with Danico Altry, but I do think with Cashman to Al-Shaihir, they got older. But I think all three of their new players are better. Like, I think they're all a level above. And so I'm really love all of that. I think Al-Shaihir stands out to me because I think that he's an underappreciated player, and he worked with D'Amico Ryans in San Francisco. So obviously that's going to, you would expect that to be a very clean kind of transition. And so, yeah, I'm all in on what the Texans did. I really think that they knocked it out of the park here. What about teams you're confused by? We'll go back to you, Warren. Any teams that what they're doing, you just don't really understand?
Well, there are a couple. Like Washington, it felt like Washington and the Tennessee Titans were definitely both building teams that like would be great a few years ago. Washington added a ton of pieces, and I think that it all depends on how quickly they all gel together. I mean, you're adding so many different pieces at so many different positions. I get it, new ownership, new coaching staff, so probably maybe that is to be expected, that you're going to be going after guys that would fit your mode a little bit and the scheme that you want to run there, and some guys that they're a little bit familiar with themselves, having coached them previously. But it sometimes, I don't know, leads to decisions where you get attached to a guy and you end up spending a little bit too much than you should have, or you ignore some of the blemishes to focus on the positives of this guy, and you don't really think about the downsides nearly as much because you just want him because you like him and you think he'll buy into your system and he'll help some of the other guys on the team. And he maybe lost too much in terms of lost too many steps there to be productive. But, you know, the Tennessee Titans, obviously they were spending a ton in free agency with the Calvin Ridley signing, you know, was definitely one for me. I love the Lloyd Cushenberry signing just because their center position was so terrible last year. And it's so important to have, especially with a young quarterback like Will Levis is, granted they gave him a little bit of competition with Mason Rudolph, but you have to have a center that's going to be able to A, help with protections, but B, also not allow that pocket to get collapsed on you instantaneously. And their center last year was just one of the worst in the NFL from a pass protection standpoint. So I thought that that move made sense. But other than that, there were some, like the Calvin Ridley, I just thought that it was a little bit too much for Ridley. So those are a couple that that I think stood out to me, aside from the Carolina Panthers, which, you know, you're spending that much money on guards. And I know they said that they wanted to come out and run the ball. Even when you're expecting it, they're still going to run it. They're going to keep running it. You're going to be surprised at how much we stick to the run. And so I get it. Like, this is the style that you want to go with. And so you got guys that definitely can help you run the football a lot. But I don't know how productive that's going to be for the next year or two, although Bryce Young certainly needs some help there because he did not have a good rookie season.
Yeah, and I mean, they had to overpay because of the Panthers, and their owner has very publicly had some issues. And so at that point, when you've become the Dan Snyder of the NFL in very quick succession, you kind of have to overpay. The Titans, that's the fan base that hates me at this point, which is hilarious because I'm a long-term Titans fan. I was born in Houston. I'm an Oilers fan, followed him over, love Steve McNair. But here you go. They're angry at me. And I think the disconnect that happens for me, and this is wrong on my part, I want to take a mea culpa here, is I'm already out on Will Levis. And the reason I'm already out on Will Levis is not because of last year, because last year, as you mentioned, Warren, he was playing in a terrible situation behind a horrific offensive line and with basically one wide receiver that could get open, and that was an older DeAndre Hopkins. And so I get why you wouldn't make any judgments off of last year, but I've been watching Will Levis play football for a very long time. I'm a Penn State fan. I watched him at Penn State. I watched him not be able to beat out Sean Clifford at Penn State. I watched him at Kentucky. I have never once watched Will Levis and thought that's an NFL starting quarterback. I very much could be wrong about that. That would not be the first time I'm wrong by any stretch of the imagination. But when I watched all those deals come in for the Titans, I needed to fix my brain. And now that I fixed my brain a little bit and go, oh yeah, they definitely have to give it a go with Will Levis. I mean, I kind of get it. You got to get Will Levis some help. The center they signed, Cushenberry, is good. I mean, given that much money to a 30-year-old wide receiver, soon to be 30-year-old wide receiver, I don't know about that. Even if you have an established quarterback, I don't know about that. But yeah, if they're trying to give Will Levis a go, and I mean, I wouldn't, but I also didn't draft him at the top of the second round. And so here we are. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, those are situations where it's not like I agree with the moves they made, but like I can understand like why the Panthers and the Titans are doing what they're doing. Like I can see like how the process is, right? There's a couple of signings that I think like I don't like the DeAndre Swift signing. I just still don't really know how we got there. Like how the Bears decided like they needed to pay DeAndre Swift.
Rich, I need to ask you a question. Why do the Bears hate Khalil Herbert and not want him to shine? Because Khalil Herbert is amazing. Let Khalil Herbert please.
Only ever been good. Yeah, Khalil Herbert's only ever been good when he's gotten a chance to touch the football in the NFL. But it was just that one was just odd. And I don't think like any teams necessarily are doing like a bad job, but I think there's a couple teams that I definitely would be concerned about if I was a fan of those teams. And it coincides with the inverse of what we talked about with the Texans, right? The Jacksonville Jaguars are in the 11th hour here with Trevor Lawrence's contract. And I mean, I don't see, they definitely didn't get better on paper. I mean, you add Mitch Morse, aging interior offensive lineman, you go from Ridley to Gabe Davis, Gabe Davis, obviously a guy we've talked about at nauseam, over the course of this program, just a very flawed NFL player. And you're going to have to pay that. And then the Miami Dolphins, like the deck shuffling that they've had, I definitely don't think the Dolphins are like as bad of a spot because, you add guys like Jordan Poyer and Shaq Barrett. Like these are good players, but you also shuffle them in. You lose Van Ginkle, you lose Xavien Howard. It's just like a lot of deck shuffling there. And you've got Tua and Jalen Waddle who are going to get big contracts on that roster coming up. So I look at those two teams and I look at them in the infrastructure and the landscape of the AFC, and I just say like, man, are these teams that are really going to be able to push past like that hump? Right. And I don't see it now. Like, I feel like they kind of aren't there. They don't have that they're not gonna be able to get through that window. So I feel like those teams are going to be stuck as kind of like perpetually, like they're going to leave you like hanging on. Right. I feel like Dolphins and Jaguars fans are always going to feel like good throughout the course of the season. You'll feel okay. But I just feel like you'll always feel like a little emptiness at the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I had the Dolphins on my list of teams I'm worried about because for the exact reason you said, they lost a lot of people. They ended up, because of the salary cap situation, having to cut Xavien Howard. They lost Christian Wilkins. They lost, you mentioned, Van Ginkle, Brandon Jones. And then they replaced those guys, but I think that they replaced, it's like you said, it's the opposite of the Texans. I think they replaced those guys and went down in quality. And that's a concern, especially with a team that was kind of more on the borderline of being truly Super Bowl contenders anyway. And so now that's, that's,
they didn't beat anybody good last year.
What'd you say?
They didn't beat anybody good last year. Like they had zero quality wins.
Yeah. And so it's a tough situation. They still have a very good coach, obviously. And they still have Tyreek Hill and they still got Tua. And when Tua's playing well, I think he's a good quarterback. And so there's a lot there for the Dolphins, but I think that's true for the wide receivers. And I have to just, cause I know that you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about here, Rich. They have, if they're playing Zay Jones and Gabe Davis on the outside on either side of each other, and I don't think that will be the case. I have to assume that they're going to spend on wide receiver in the draft. But if they're playing Gabe Davis and Zay Jones opposite each other on the outside, is that the least efficient from like a yards per route run metric? Is that the least efficient outside duo in the league? Can you think of any maybe Carolina last year when they were running out whoever next to Mingo. But like that's wild. That is wildly inefficient yards per route run on the outside. Can you think of any?
Not off the top of my head. It's just not an ideal like group, especially like you said, like with when you have a guy like Trevor Lawrence, like you want to be able to prop up. You look at a guy like Ridley, and Ridley was still a guy who regularly got open. Like when you watch Ridley, and I know Matt, you know, if you follow like work like Matt Harmon does, like Ridley was open at will last year. And now you're going to a guy that really struggles to get to he's the big bugaboo for Gabe Davis' entire career is the dude can't beat man coverage. He can't get open on man coverage. So it's a definite like big subtraction offensively for them to go from Calvin Ridley to Gabe Davis.
And the other thing I'll just add real quick on the Jaguars, because they were on the periphery of what I was going to talk about here as well. You know, the Trevor Lawrence stat that stood out to me in some of my early research, he's got the worst record of any quarterback in the NFL with a minimum number of starts record when his team does not get a single takeaway. The last 3 years, the Jaguars are 1-18. That speaks to two things. Number one, they've played a lot of games where they haven't gotten takeaways. Their defense needs to be better. And number two, like Trevor Lawrence needs help to actually win these games. And it feels like they've had a net subtraction, as you mentioned, Rich, in like one of the most important times to have success, which is when he's still on that rookie year, rookie salary. So I don't know how they can get to where they really want to get, where their goal should be. Right, they might have different goals, but their goal should have been to make a run to the Super Bowl while Trevor Lawrence is super cheap, and they absolutely have not built themselves into a position to be able to do that.
Yeah, it's
you said
it's
they're not better situation. Than I
any other, yeah, any other teams there for you, Warren, that you're kind of worried about a little bit coming out here free agency, either what they did or didn't do to address their issues.
Sorry, my headphone cut out. Can you say that again?
Yeah. Any other teams that like are in that boat that you're worried about what they either did or didn't do and kind of their position coming out of free agency?
The Pittsburgh Steelers are definitely one that stands out to me just because I get it. You get Russell Wilson on the cheap. That's understandable. We joked about it yesterday in the Slack. He's not going to be allowed to cook. They don't have the options for him to cook. George Pickens is like the only guy that they've got right now that is a legitimate threat. And it's just going to be a lot of running. Now that fits Arthur Smith's style. And so this is going to be one of the more talented quarterbacks that he's had to work with, even though Russell Wilson is lacking in a lot of the things that a decent offense needs to have in order to be efficient in passing the football over the middle and take advantage. He also holds onto the ball for too long. So I think that there's going to be some things that Arthur Smith is going to be like, man, I've really wanted a good quarterback. Russell Wilson has that pedigree. Oh crap. Russell Wilson's actually not as good as I was thinking he was. Cause so many of these coaches, you know, in the off season, they get to do a little bit more work on this, but so many of these coaches, they focus on their own team. So like Arthur Smith is not watching Russell Wilson struggle with Sean Payton last year in Denver very much. He's focused on how the hell do I save my job in Atlanta? And all he's doing is watching the opponents that Atlanta is going to play, and he's watching his own offense. And so I think that's going to be a little bit of a letdown for him. And I just, you know, I could see why Russell Wilson would want to come play for Mike Tomlin, because they always have a solid number of wins. They always do well enough. They're never really a disaster. And so it's a good floor. It's a good cushion. And if you get a decent performance out of the run game, like you're going to be in games. The defense is good enough, but I just don't think that they are in a spot where they're going to be able to really do what maybe they think that Russell Wilson would have been able to do for them. You know, otherwise.
Yeah, I think the Steelers, from what was available, did well, but they also like they're just a team that's just going to be like in that perpetual run that we said, you know, kind of stuck in like that middle ground, the celebrated. Listen, you can laud Mike Tomlin all you want for not having a losing record, but they also aren't having a lot of winning records either. And like they haven't been able to compete for a Super Bowl, but maybe once in the past decade. So eventually you do kind of want to scorch the earth a little bit, right? To have some failure, to get a better draft pick. And, you know, adding Patrick Queen and Dante Jackson and Russell Wilson, what they did, are all upgrades of what they had last year. But they also made the worst signing of the offseason by bringing in Arthur Smith. So, you know, does that counteract everything that they've done? I mean, we've got a guy now that showed us in Atlanta, like, he just doesn't get, like, where modern, you know, offenses are. I mean, this is a team that's, like, one of the dead last in terms of, like, 11 personnel rate, like, and not even close to, like, the league average, like, drop back rate, all of these things. And we'll see if things change going from Desmond Ridder to Russell Wilson. But this iteration of Russell Wilson is not the Russell Wilson of yesteryear. And the style of football that Russell Wilson has thrived at his entire career is archaic in the NFL. It doesn't win in today's NFL. You know, being able to be a guy that only shoots, you know, three-pointers or slam dunks, you know, the check down. He throws nothing in the intermediate area. He's never done it for his career. That is now what wins in the NFL. So, I mean, it's another thing where the Steelers definitely got better as a real team in the areas like where they added players. But, I mean, is this a team that's going to win, compete for a Super Bowl? They're not. They just aren't.
So I'm kind of slightly in the minority here in that I think that this is actually a good fit for Russell Wilson and for Arthur Smith. And it's a good opportunity for those two to try to see if this is like the best. Arthur Smith was dealing with terrible quarterback play when he was trying to run his system. And before last year, his offenses, they weren't terrible. They were able to run the football. I mean, we remember what Tyler Allgeier did in Atlanta. This is his best quarterback, certainly since Ryan Tannehill in Tennessee. And, you know, we'll, is Russell Wilson now better than that Ryan Tannehill? I don't really know. But I think it's an opportunity to see if this is going to work. And if you're the Steelers and you are, because you continually win, you're never in a position to get a quarterback, and you're in a division that is the best in football, or at least one of the best in football. If not, you got to take a swing. And they're taking a swing on Russell Wilson that I think he fits really well with what Arthur Smith wants to do. That combo meshes to me. And they're going to try to run the football, and they're going to try to throw it deep to George Pickens. And we'll see where it goes. Is it going to work? I don't know. That's a lot of money to give to Patrick Queen, who was the second best linebacker on the Ravens. I don't really know if that was such a great signing, but they've been needed a linebacker, that kind of linebacker, ever since the Ryan Shazier injury. So I find it hard to get upset with what the Steelers are doing because I don't know what other avenues they had.
Right.
And they might as well give it a go. And maybe it works. And maybe Wilson just connects with Pickens on 13 Cortland Sutton-esque touchdowns, and they're able to run the ball because they actually give it to Jaylen Warren instead of Najee Harris, and it works. So I'm at least interested to see that. What about the other quarterback? You mentioned him at the top. Warren with Kirk Cousins. I mean, I think all of us are in agreement. This is an absolute no-brainer for the Falcons, and Cousins is the best quarterback in the division. But you wrote a little bit about him and kind of the ways in which, you know, he might be able to help this team. So what are your general thoughts here on this Cousin move?
Yeah, before I get into that, I just want to say one other team that I'm a little bit concerned with is just the Giants, because the New York Giants, they've got to figure out this quarterback position. And they're one of these teams that made that playoff, I don't want to call it a run, they did win a playoff game in Daboll's first season there. They made a bunch of changes structurally. They really made life easy for Daniel Jones. And they were able to surprise some people with an easy schedule, some good, great luck in these one-score games, and made it to the playoffs. And now you've got them taking a decided step back last season. Obviously, Daniel Jones got hurt, but that wasn't the reason they took the step back. The reason they took the step back is because Daniel Jones is actually not a good quarterback. They shouldn't have paid him. They're obviously regretting that decision now, but I do worry about it from the perspective of like that staff, because you've got some good coaches there, but what do you have to work with? And they've got to figure out that, and it starts at the quarterback position, but then you also lose Saquon Barkley, which I understand they weren't going to pay him, but he's still a dynamic player that no longer is be able to be counted on, depended on, leaned on, what have you. And so that was one that I think I'm just worried for that staff, and they need to have some semblance of success, or at least, in my opinion, make a move in the draft for a quarterback, and that way you're buying yourself a little bit of a lifeline. Otherwise, if you keep trying to get Daniel Jones to do something, I just think you're going to be constantly disappointed. Speaking of, you know, transitioning to constantly being disappointed. That's the Atlanta Falcons in a nutshell. But, you know, I understand Rich doesn't like Arthur Smith and feels like his style is not successful in the modern era of football. I don't have the same necessary opinion of that, but I think that they approach this, knowing some people in the building, from a unique perspective. So they had Matt Ryan, and Matt Ryan had a massive salary and a massive salary cap when these guys first took over the team. And so they were there for a year. Then they said, look, let's pivot to the exact opposite direction. Instead of spending, you know, a massive chunk of our salary cap on an older quarterback, let's go the opposite way and not spend hardly anything on a quarterback and try to acquire the pieces that we need. And if we get a quarterback who is going to play better than what we are paying him, play to a higher level than what we're using on the salary cap, and we're spending the rest of that money that we're saving on guys that are playing well from a salary cap perspective, we will have some success here. And, you know, they sort of figured out a little way to have some success in that second year, Desmond Ridder's rookie year, where he only played at the end. It was a large part, Ray, because of what you were saying, with a great run game. They had a lot of production with some backs that weren't, you know, coveted by other teams. They weren't marquee. They weren't being paid a lot. They weren't drafted really high. And they got success out of the scheme of the run game. And so then it was like, why we were all excited about them heading into last year. It's okay. And what I wrote in the book and what I said all along is better defensively. They got a better running back specifically in the draft. What they need to have if they're going to reach their ceiling, which I thought that their ceiling was the playoffs, is they just need to get competent play out of Desmond Ridder. He doesn't have to be great. He just can't be terrible. And he was terrible. He could not be great. He couldn't be competent. He was terrible. And Arthur Smith was dealing with that. Arthur Smith was dealing with any moves over to Taylor Heinicke, who's likewise terrible. Previously, it was Marcus Mariota. None of these guys are accurate. None of these guys are making good decisions. I mean, the interceptions, I did a clip of all the Desmond Ridder interceptions inside the 10-yard line. I mean, it's a disaster. The guy is horrific with his decision-making. He literally lost by himself multiple games last year for the Atlanta Falcons. I think what he had 45 game killing plays, which I deem interceptions, fumbles lost, or sacks taken, because we've now learned that sacks are a little bit more on the quarterback than what we have once thought. We once blamed the O-line for sacks entirely. Now we know that sacks are a little bit more controlled by the quarterback. Fumbles lost and interceptions, these are quarterback stats. He had 45 such stats in 13 starts last year. When he had less than four game-killing plays in a game, the Falcons went 5-2. I mean, that's getting you to the playoffs all day long. That's winning the NFC South. It's not a problem. The problem is he had game-killing plays of four or more in six games, and they went 1-5. They just could not over – he's not good enough a quarterback to overcome any of that stuff, which is why he just got traded to the Arizona Cardinals for the receiver.
Rondale Moore,
a true player for player trade that is fun to see. We should get more of these in the NFL.
The ghost of fantasy past, Rondale Moore. I mean, I can't wait to see Rich have to write him up in the tiers in the fantasy package. Rich, get ready for Rondale Moore and Atlanta talk. Can't wait.
I mean, that's a good trade. Rich. Listen, the Falcons are now going to be putting on the field as a base offense because they're going to be a base 11 personnel team under Zach Robinson, because that's what every head coach from that coaching tree has done. Yep. I mean, they're going to put Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Rondale Moore, and Kyle Pitts on the field with Bijan Robinson. And like,
it's pretty good.
And Kirk. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
And I think it's great. And that's the thing. I feel good for the Atlanta fans. All fan bases should not just be suffering incessantly for years and years and years. Like, ownership, general manager, coach, somebody should either make the right plays, get the right guys in there to give the fan bases a little bit more satisfaction. I think that's going to happen here this year from Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons as they're presently built. Maybe we're a year too early on them. But the bottom line here is just Kirk is just such a big upgrade. He has been one of the most accurate passers in the NFL. And that's just something that we did not see out of Desmond Ridder. We did not see out of any of the other iterations of the Atlanta Falcons quarterback for the last several years. And Matt Ryan, I mean, his arm was just like shot at the end there down in Atlanta. So the fact that Kirk Cousins is going to give them a much higher floor is going to be a lot of fun to watch. And he has a very accurate deep ball, which Darnell Mooney was not seeing in Chicago from Justin Fields whatsoever. That's going to be a big upgrade for Mooney specifically. These receivers aren't going to know, who have been in Atlanta, aren't going to know what it's like to have a ball hit them in stride consistently. Hopefully Kirk is going to be able to deliver that. And you already have the run game. So I'm excited to see what Atlanta is able to bring to the table this year. I thought they should have been better last year. It was, in my opinion, Desmond Ridder's fault. Arthur Smith shares a little bit of the blame as well, but I understand the thought process that they were trying to bring with a unique style of team building. I definitely thought this was the right time to pivot into this, the right time to say, this isn't working. The young guys aren't working. It's going to cost coaches more jobs. Let's bring in a guy who's going to be able to take advantage of all of our younger players. Cause they're almost doing the inverse, where a lot of times you get a young quarterback who's actually good, CJ Stroud, who can elevate some of the guys around him. What they have is they've got the vet quarterback with a lot of the younger skill players, right? All these guys are on their rookie deals. You mentioned all the receivers that they have, plus Bijan Robinson. All they got like very young skill players who are cheap, and then they pair it with a veteran quarterback who's making more money, who should be a lot better than what they've had the last several years.
And they have the 9th pick in the draft, right? Like, they have 8th pick in the draft.
Yeah, they're in a really good spot. And like I said, those I mentioned this earlier, any concerns you have on, you know, defense with some of the veterans that were on one-year deals, it did help them, but, you know, now aren't there. Well, they have draft capital. They can go and try to take advantage of that. I don't really have anything to add to the Falcons except for this. I don't know if I had trauma dumped this out of my brain, but I completely forgot that we got an Arthur Smith, Matt Ryan year, that they overlapped in Atlanta. That had completely... I had completely dumped that out of my brain. And so here we are. So Russell Wilson is definitely not the best quarterback that Arthur Smith has had since Ryan Tannehill, because I don't even think this version of Russell Wilson is better than that pop arm version of Matt Ryan. But I guess we'll have to see moving forward. I want to transition here into the running backs. I think that was the most notable position of the early part of free agency. Before we do that, though, I do want to mention that the fantasy implications, the fantasy fallout of all of these top running backs, Rich Rebar spent his entire Monday and Tuesday slaving over a hot keyboard to write up these guys over on the website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can read his thoughts on the fantasy implications of, you know, Saquon, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, all of those guys. Go over to Sharp Football Analysis, check it out. It's all part of our fantasy football package, so make sure you read about that. And I guess I should just go to you, Rich. You know, there's a lot of running backs to change hands. We're not going to talk about all of them, but what's kind of the one that stands out to you, the one you find most interesting, either from a real life or fantasy perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a lot of, like I said, deck shuffling here. You know, a lot of running backs that were coming off of bad seasons, down seasons. Like when you look at the guys like of Austin Eckler, Josh Jacobs, Tony Pollard, these are guys that had their worst seasons of their career. That's why they're available this year. You had Saquon, who basically we ended like our 4-year drought of the Giants and Saquon Barkley, like trying to figure out a contract extension. He was finally mercifully let go. He's probably the most intriguing of all, because just from a top down, you know, assessment of what Barkley was coming into the NFL, the offense he's joining. You know, definitely Barkley has not lived up to his rookie year production or that billing. But like, he's been on just like some anemic rosters, which, again, this is why you don't draft a running back before you draft a quarterback. But, you know, he was on teams that literally 3 of the 6 years, they were 30th or lower in offensive scoring. He's going to a team that has been under Jalen Hurts, you know, in the top half of league scoring the past 3 years. He's played with one good offensive player his entire career, and that was 1 year of Odell Beckham. You know, now he's going to an offense that has Jalen Hurts, that has A.J. Brown, has Devontae Smith. It has a far superior offensive line. I'm at least intrigued to see where the fit is. Would I have done this move? Probably not. But when you look at, like, the Eagles, they tried to kind of, you know, use DeAndre Swift as like a low leverage, you know, trade last year to kind of recreate the production they had in 2022. And their backfield just wasn't very good last year compared to what it was in 2022. Like I dropped the chart in there. You can see it on the website where all the efficiency stats, like they were just a top down worst running unit. Their running backs excluding from the quarterback. So I'm excited to at least see what it is from a talent perspective. All the other ones are largely kind of, you know, a lot of guys just swapping around and swapping positions with teams. Like I said, DeAndre Swift is by far the most puzzling of the signings for me, just given that the Bears had Khalil Herbert capable back per touch anytime he's touched the football, you know, and then Roshan Johnson was a guy that at least was okay in his rookie season production. They had used the third round draft pick on him. So that's kind of where it is. Josh Jacobs, I think, is probably the most intriguing one because, you know, Aaron Jones was so good the final five weeks last year when he was finally healthy. And you say, all right, well, if Josh Jacobs could be that, we're working with something. This is a team that, you know, Jordan Love was better than we thought he was going to be, especially the back half of the year when the offense kind of calibrated itself from being an offense that just wanted to take vertical shots to being more intermediate, getting the ball out of Jordan Love's hands. And you look at Josh Jacobs, and he basically was the equivalent of what A.J. Dillon was last year, and it was a down year for his career. But also, I wrote about this a little bit, his 2022 season also was a major outlier, and no one should have expected like his 2022 season to be kind of the player that like you were going to have the rest of his career. It feels very similar to me to the DeMarco Murray Cowboys year, where DeMarco Murray had the 400 touches because, you know, Josh Jacobs had 393 touches 2 years ago. And DeMarco Murray had a good year when he left the Eagles to go to the Titans, but then just never really got it back after that. He basically had one good year the rest of his career. I hope that doesn't happen to Josh Jacobs, but it does feel eerily similar to me that where you have a player that like really wasn't hyper as efficient his first two or three years at the Raiders, has this huge volume-induced year, he leads the league in rushing, his 400 touches, immediately falls off like everyone outside of Derrick Henry that has that many touches does. And does he ever get that back? I think it was an aggressive move. Obviously, we heard behind the scenes there were some other things that went into that with Aaron Jones. We will probably never know the complete truth with that, but it is very intriguing how we got here to this point with Josh Jacobs on the Packers.
So my only – that DeMarco Murray season, it's like it's in burned in my brain because my only freezing cold take ever – was me talking about how I wouldn't draft DeMarco Murray the year before he lost his mind because of how bad he had been, you know, coming out of with the Eagles, right? And so, yeah, no, DeMarco Murray's seared in my brain. That one also stands out to me, the Jacobs one. I do think that that's very clearly to me the most interesting one. I will say about Tony Pollard is that Tony Pollard was coming off of a serious injury and was a different back than he had been, you know, before in his career. Is that because of the injury? Is that because he was asked to take on more work? I'm not sure. He's going to be in a role, I think, that's going to be closer to where he was with Zeke in Dallas than last year, because they still have, you know, Brian Robinson. And so I am interested in Pollard. I think that might, I'm not sorry, I don't know why I kept putting him in Washington. That's Eckler. With Pollard, I do think there's a chance that Pollard is actually better, and that we're maybe underselling Pollard coming off of that injury, going to the Titans. You know, Tajay Spears is there. Do they really trust him? So I think Pollard might actually come out of this looking fine. But on Josh Jacobs with the Aaron Jones thing, Aaron Jones to me is, he's a better player, and he was already there, and you're giving Jacobs a lot of money, albeit Jones is older. Jacobs actually has more touches in the NFL than Aaron Jones does. Jacobs has 1,502 touches. Aaron Jones has 1,449. The tread on Josh Jacobs is, you know, a lot. He's younger, and I think age matters more than carries and touches. But it's a trade that I don't think you needed to make. And unless there was, like you said, some backroom stuff with Aaron Jones, I just think Aaron Jones is a better player. And we saw that in the playoffs last year down the stretch. I mean, down the stretch last year, over their last five games, he averaged 5.7 yards per carry. He had an explosive run on 15.4% of his carries in the playoffs, scored three touchdowns in their win over the Cowboys. I just think he's a better player. And that's a confusing move for me. What about for you, Warren?
Yeah, just to piggyback on the Barkley real quick before I throw out another name. So much of what a running back's going to be able to deliver is dependent upon your O-line and how much people respect your quarterback, right? Like, do you have a passing game at all, or is the running back just kind of have to do everything? And in New York, like, it's just, there's such a juxtaposition, diametrically opposite what Saquon had in New York versus what he's going to have in Philadelphia. In New York, last 2 years, the run block win rate ranked 31st and 26th. Eagles last 2 years, number one and number two. Now, I know they have to replace Jason Kelce at center. They're going to have to do a little bit more improvement upon the offensive line. Something that's going to be consistent with the next running back I'm going to discuss. But it's just, it's not going to be as bad as what it was in New York by any stretch. If you look at Pro Football Focus's grades for the run blocking, Giants bottom 10 in the league pretty consistently. Eagles top five in the league quite consistently. And then you talk about the quarterbacks, like I just mentioned. Barkley's career, I went back and looked. He's got 74 career games in New York, 37 starts from Daniel Jones, 20 from like end of the line Eli Manning, 6 from Tommy DeVito, 5 from Tyrod Taylor, 4 from Mike Glennon, and 2 from Jake Fromm. So, like, we aren't talking about Jalen Hurts. We're not talking about these receivers that they had in Philadelphia. We're not talking about this offensive line. Just so much more upside for Saquon Barkley in Philadelphia, in my opinion. And then we get over to the guy that I just think is such a great fit, in part because of how we watch this Tennessee Titans offense perform from a play calling perspective over the last several years. I think this could help potentially extend his career. And that's Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry landing in Baltimore, to me, is one of the bigger, I think, as long as he's staying healthy, which is obviously a concern at his age, just one of the more slam dunk moves that we're going to see instant payoff on the field. And I'm pretty sure that Rich agrees here, but like, I start with just the philosophy of the offense. The Tennessee Titans offense was one of the most run heavy offenses in the NFL. And they ran almost no matter what. They would run almost all the time after a first down and completion, just because they didn't want to go pass punt. So they would always go to a second and 10 run play, which is obviously stupid. And we also saw them run a ton on first downs as well. So they were always one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL for the last several years. And as a result of being very run heavy, they were very predictable. And as a result of being predictable, defenses would stack the box because they don't really respect the quarterback that much. They don't really respect the receivers. And the offense is telling you by looking at the tendencies that we're going to be running the ball a lot here. And so Derrick Henry had the number one highest rate over the last 4 years of the number one highest rate of loaded boxes. 88% of his runs, all runs, were against 7+ man boxes. 53% of his runs were against 8+ man boxes. You look at like short yardage situations, third down runs, particularly 94% of his runs on third down came up against loaded boxes. And yet, despite basically doing nothing but facing loaded boxes over the last 4 years, number one in success rate, number one in first down rate, number two in EPA per rush. Derrick Henry was a beast behind an offensive line that is not as good as what Baltimore's offensive line is. Now, Baltimore does have Rich wrote up this on the website, so you guys should go check out his analysis over at Sharp Football Analysis. All the moving pieces that are occurring on the Baltimore Ravens offensive line. There were some injuries last year. They lost some guys. Some guys are still on the free agent block. So there are guys that they're going to need to replace. I was on Baltimore radio yesterday talking to them a little bit about the situation here. And they were the ones who brought up that the offensive line needs to have some assistance. But in addition to the fact that I think Derrick Henry is going to get less. So let's talk about the implications of he faced a ton of loaded boxes and a very run heavy offense last year. Baltimore is much more progressive. They throw the ball a lot more. They have a quarterback that's going to be respected. And as a result, Derrick Henry is going to be running more frequently into lighter boxes. This is where the defense is going to have to pick their poison. We're getting run on by Derrick Henry because we aren't loading the box. So now let's load the box. Well, last season, when Lamar Jackson passed the ball against a 7+ man box, number one in EPA per attempt, number one in success rate, number three completion rate, yards per attempt, first down rate, he was among the top four in the NFL in every single one of these statistics against a loaded box. And this offense was not digging and dunking, trying to get it out of his hands very quickly against a loaded box. Against a loaded box, he was number four in air yards per attempt, number one in rate of passes that gained 10+ yards. They were pushing the ball down the field when they were facing loaded boxes. So I just think it's a great situation. Defenses are going to really be at their wits' end trying to figure out, do we try to get Derrick Henry out of the way? Do we try to play back and get you know, and stop these deep passes from going overhead is going to give a lot of options. And I think it helps prolong Derrick Henry a little bit. He doesn't have to carry the load so much because they're passing the football a little bit more. And as a result of that, he hopefully will be a little bit healthier till later in the season. And hopefully for the Ravens deeper into the playoffs. So you've got that going for Derrick Henry as he's getting older. And then also it might help Lamar Jackson a little bit because Derrick Henry is just such a slam dunk on some of these runs on third down or short yardage or near the goal line that, like, instead of forcing Lamar to have to like scramble and be creative, maybe they do hand the ball a little bit more off to Derrick Henry to just pound it in and save some collisions from Lamar Jackson, which last year he was finally healthy for like the first time in years. And it allowed them to have a good seed for the playoffs. They obviously were stupid and didn't run the ball enough in their game against the Chiefs. But I think that keeping Lamar Jackson healthy throughout the course of the season is definitely a priority as well. I just think it works so well for the Ravens on a variety of different levels.
Wow, you, Rich, any thoughts, any extra thoughts here on the Henry situation?
I think that what the Ravens have had a really intriguing open here. Obviously, I think, you know, retaining Matabuke and getting Derrick Henry, like easy fit, like Warren laid out. They also lost. It's interesting because the guys they've lost, like, are not necessarily great players, but like they were core contributors to them last year. They either played a lot of snaps or helped them. We'll see if they retain, you know, Kevin Zeitler, but, you know, Geno Stone leaving to the Bengals. Jadeveon Clowney had 10 sacks for them, 9.5 sacks for them. He's still out there. Both John Simpson and Morgan Moses, not necessarily great offensive linemen, but played a lot of snaps for them last year. They're both gone. It's interesting to kind of see where they are right now. So they've lost a lot of core, you know, contributors to their team last year. They're in a competitive division. You know, obviously they're not going to fall off. They're the Baltimore Ravens. Like, there's a level of, you know, floor we're getting from this team, but I do think they're an interesting team this offseason. And then they don't have like the wide receiver still. You know, Todd Monken wanted to run more 11 personnel and they started the year like that, but then it was immediately abandoned because of the injuries to Bateman and Odell that they had early in the season. Now you add a guy like Derrick Henry and, you know, is it still going to be a lot more like that? Because that's the box count's all dictated by what you come out with offensively. So, like, if they're still just going to be a team that doesn't really run 11, like, Derrick Henry's still going to see a lot of, you know, heavy boxes, and it still helps a guy like Lamar Jackson, but Lamar Jackson still is going to be throwing to Zay Flowers and Mark Andrews. They still need a lot more additions in that area. It feels like the Ravens have just been constantly chasing that wide receiver spot. Even when they get one right, like Zay Flowers last year, it's still a need.
And like that way, Ozzie Newsome couldn't draft a wide receiver to save his life. It was so funny, these two teams in the same division, and the Ravens were so great at drafting defensive players, and the Steelers were so great at drafting wide receivers. And like, the Ravens couldn't draft a wide receiver to save their life. That's why they were always going out in free agency and spending on guys for Joe Flacco. I mean, it's just been this way for the Ravens for years and years.
Yeah, they're pretty interesting. And the Bills, too, I think are interesting, too, in that same regard. Like, we didn't talk about the Bills, but, like, the amount of guys that have been purged from, like, the Bills, like, the contributions they got, and not even counting Travis White, who's basically been out the last couple of years, but Mitch Morse, Jordan Poyer, Leonard Floyd is gone, Gabe Davis. Like, these are not necessarily guys that are, like, the apex prime players, the position where these are, like, contributors to your team. And to, like, have that amount of snaps leave your roster is significant, even if they aren't like the guys that are constantly like being the headliners of your roster.
On the Baltimore wide receivers, I don't have any other thoughts on Derrick Henry because I think it's such a very clearly good fit. Yeah. That they tried to trade for him last year. If they complete that trade last year at the deadline for Derrick Henry, do they beat the Chiefs? I think the answer is probably yes.
And well, they run it more than six times. We do know that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They would definitely run it more, and I think that probably means they beat the Chiefs. And so, you know, it's kind of, that's a real swing, sliding doors moment here for the NFL. But what I'll say is, it's fun that we get to revive the Titans' great to Ravens' aging veteran pipeline. That I'm glad to see that is still alive and well. Talking about Ravens wide receivers, the great Derek Mason. You'll always be my guy, Derek Mason. the pipeline.
Well, Steve McNair, still there. Steve McNair going.
That's right. Going there. I'm telling you, the pipeline is real. The pipeline is real, and it has been revived with Derrick Henry. We need to talk here real quick. We're running out of time. We need to talk about the defensive side of the ball. a ton of money spent on defensive linemen, a lot of great defensive linemen and pass rushers changing. We talked a little bit about, you know, Greenard and Danielle Hunter, Christian Wilkins obviously getting a massive contract from the Raiders, a whole bunch of money spent on the defensive line. Warren, anybody really stand out to you? Any that was really interesting,
Yeah, I just think this is going back to kind of what Rich was talking about previously. But if you look at the Houston Texans and just some of the moves that they made, certainly C.J. Stroud, I want to say, didn't come out of nowhere. They obviously believed him. They got so much more than they expected out of him last season, in my opinion. And you've got a defensive-minded head coach for the Texans. And now they go and you look at their top – actually, every single player, I'm looking at the list of the guys that they signed. Have they signed anybody that's not a defensive player in free agency? I mean, they go and they land Danielle Hunter. They've got Autry. They've got Okuda. They've got Ford, Lonnie Johnson, Foley Fodakasi. Is there anybody else that they've signed? Every single player that they've signed has been defensive. So this is going, and you get, sometimes I don't like this strategy, but if we're talking defense side of the ball, should be noted, like, the Texans went out there and said, we know where some of our weak points were. They were on the defensive side. We've got to figure out and get guys that are going to be able to fit the scheme a lot better. And I think they went out and did that, and they were quite aggressive in doing so. So that's going to be exciting to see if it in fact does translate. We talk about that division in general, right? The Colts, where they're at. We look at, obviously, we know that the Jacksonville Jaguars were a little bit down on them. And so, like, the Houston Texans, can they definitely, like, take that step to secure a little bit of kind of feeling good about their upward trajectory and then building around the young quarterback, C.J. Stroud, to take advantage of that rookie window, unlike the Jacksonville Jaguars were ever able to do with Trevor Lawrence.
My guy that I'm going to be watching, and I want to be very clear here that I don't think this was a bad signing. I don't think he's going to bust or anything, but the Bryce Huff with the Eagles is interesting to me because they gave him a lot of money and he's coming off of a career year in which he had that career year in a limited role. And the thing about his production last year is it was legit. His production last year was legit. Brandon Thorne, by the way, Brandon Thorne, we're talking, shouting out people. Brandon Thorne's an excellent follow sub to his Substack. It's very good. But he had Huff a fifth in his high quality pressure per snap. So the pressures he was getting last year were legit. He was really a very good pass rusher. But that is now, you know, that was one season. He's only ever been a kind of part-time player in his career. Are they going to ask him to be more than that? And we've seen this template of a part-time player having a career year at a contract year and then getting their money and it not working out. And so he's one that I'm really watching. The talent's definitely there. He is definitely, you know, he was definitely a legit pass rusher. He wasn't just, you know, getting cleanup sacks like we've seen other people get. But that's an interesting contract to give out to him, especially since, you know, I don't really know if that was their main issue, although I guess we'll see what happens with Hassan Reddick. What about you? Anybody, I guess, on the defensive side for you, Rich?
No, I mean, you guys covered them. As I said, the Texans, I think, still, because not only did they get max out what they thought they were going to get out of C.J. Stroud, I mean, Will Anderson was that also, you know, what they got out of him. So getting him, I mean, Leonard Floyd is a guy that just constantly changes teams, but, like, he's consistently, like, pretty good. And so, you know, obviously him going to the 49ers could be, you know, so they didn't get anything out of Chase Young after the Chase Young trade. I mean, obviously just looking for something opposite Bosa. What's funny is, like, Chase Young, the one good game he had was the Super Bowl, and you saw how much better, like, the defense was. So, like, if they get anything out of Leonard Floyd, I mean, that's still a team that's going to be good, really good defensively. But it's not a great edge pass rushing class either. That's, like, why we've seen the edge guys get big money, and it's why I've seen the running back be more active, the running back market be more active than we have in years past. Those are two weak points of the draft for sure.
Yeah, and I mean there are some edges that I like, but you're right that it's not a great spot. Speaking of the draft, I do have to bring up your pre-draft rankings. Fantasy football rankings are going up on the site. I believe the running backs are going to be going up soon. I think we left that out of the running back talk, but can you talk a little bit about this running back class and why we did maybe see this real push to sign these running backs? Because it's, I mean, it's not great, is it?
No, I mean, objectively, it's one of the worst running back classes to have. And, it, you know, you can see, well, I wonder if it's an outlier, if it's like something that trends, I mean, you know, forward, because the running back class does look a little bit better next year. But the lowest the first running back has ever been taken in the NFL draft is Bishop Sankey. He went 54th overall. Big Houston and
that's
Titans
a name
thing.
I have not heard in some time, Bishop
he's
Sankey.
The lowest. He went at pick 54. The only other time a running back, the first running back taken in the NFL draft, was taken outside of the top 50, you have to go all the way back to 1963. We're definitely going to push that this season. From just an objective measure, from like the player performance, and we'll get, like I said, I'll have a write-ups on all these players, you know, coming out next week on the site, because we skipped a week for free agency. But the NFL showed their hands, right? Like, you could get these guys on day two, day three, and these guys will still be taken on day two and day three. But it's one of the worst classes in terms of what capital is going to be put into it. And we saw the transition of just veterans changing hands, that the NFL is fully aware of this as well.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, the pre-draft
and inversely, the wide receivers, the wide receiver market has been slow to move because
it's a
really good wide receiver class.
It's an excellent wide receiver class. We won't have to fight about this one, I don't think. This is going to be a good one for sure. Bishop Sankey. The only thing I remember about, not the only thing, but the lasting memory of Bishop Sankey is Ken Wisenhunt just complaining about his footwork. And so Wisenhunt would just say, they'd ask him all the time, why isn't Bishop Sankey getting more carries? And he would say footwork. Like, he would just continue to bring up footwork. And
I think Sankey scored two touchdowns his first career game. And I mean, he might've scored two the rest of the way.
I did like Bishop Sankey. That's a draft swing and a miss from me. I hope you're doing well. Hope you're doing well, Bishop. Like we said, go head over to Sharp Football Analysis. There's so much content over there. There'll be more coming out. Our draft kit, our fantasy football draft kit's already available. You can bundle it with our in-season package and save money. So make sure you do that. Warren has some articles up on the site. Have more coming out soon. We've got our mock drafts. We've got Ryan McChrystal and Brendan Donahue, two of the most accurate mock drafters. They're going to have their mock drafts coming out weekly as we move on closer to the draft. Ton of draft content, team needs, everything over at Sharp Football Analysis. So go, make sure you go and check that out. We'll be back on this podcast soon to talk more free agent fallout, talk about the draft. So subscribe. Like it, leave us a review. We appreciate it. And we'll be back to talk with you soon.